We're always happy to have Brother Boyd K. Packer return to the campus and to speak to our student body. From 1955 to 1961, he was assistant administrator of the institutes and seminaries of the church with offices on this campus, and it was from here that he was selected by the general authorities, approved by the membership of the church, to be an assistant to the Quorum of the Twelve. His prior experience included that of a seminary instructor and coordinator of Indian affairs at the Intermountain Indian School in Brigham City, and he is mainly responsible for the very large number of seminaries among Indian students of the church, where we now have thousands of Indian students attending. He was also, while here, a member of the Administrative Council of the Unified Church School System, and we valued his wisdom and experience. He's a native of Brigham City, graduate with his undergraduate degree from Utah State University, and was one of the first three to receive his doctorate degree from this institution in 1962. As a man whom we all look upon as one of peace, you'll be interested that knowing that during World War II he served as a bomber pilot in the Pacific Theater. He's been a member of the City Council, Brigham City, and was a member of the North Box Elder State Council for many years, received the Distinguished Service Award of the Junior Chamber of Commerce in his home city, and presently is a member, in addition to being an assistant to the Quorum of the Twelve, of the Governor's Committee for Children and Youth in the state of Utah. His greatest accomplishment, however, is the wife he married, whom we're happy to have here, and I'm going to ask her to stand as the mother of nine fine children. We're now happy to introduce to you Brother Boyd Packer.
It's good to be on this campus again, brethren and sisters. I too compliment the choir for the inspirational singing. The Lord has said that his soul delighteth in the song of the heart. Yea, a song of the righteous is a prayer unto me, and shall be answered with blessings upon their heads. And I'm sure that those who have participated this morning in rendering this music so beautifully have called forth blessings upon their heads. I confess, brethren and sisters, I've been very restless over this assignment. I suppose I've been hesitant because of the feeling that perhaps my choice of words or inadequate ability to express or to emphasize may make the subject chosen seem unimportant to you. I'm not afraid that you'll misunderstand what I say, but because this subject's been reviewed before you so many times that you'll fail to see in it something as significant and as important as it actually is. Now, this is a devotional assembly. This is the one assembly called for the entire student body of the university, which is called for devotional or inspirational purposes. And as we come here to speak to you representing the general authorities of the church, we're under much more of an obligation than to merely be informative. I sense that many of you come here with the expectation that you will draw forth from us answers to some questions that you may have. Now, since this is a devotional assembly, you have the right to expect some inspiration from your attendance here. But I think that it's important that you know this. The inspiration you may draw from the general authorities as they come here to speak to you depends only partly on the effort they have expended in the preparation of their sermons. It depends much more considerably on what preparation you have made for their message. In this, I make no differentiation between the members of the faculty and the student body. Now, there's a tendency always for us to be a little resistant to instruction. We hear a stirring sermon, and we are always want to say, "I wish Brother Jones were here. He surely needed that instruction." Or we may even hear a sermon and consent to the truth of the words and yet be unwilling to change. A poet framed this: "The sermon was ended, the priest had descended, much delighted were they, but preferred the old way." With that much said by way of introduction, the whole burden of my message today can be said in three simple words: follow the brethren. Though I may elaborate and attempt to illustrate and emphasize, there is the fact, the disarmingly simple fact, that in the three words, follow the brethren, rest the most important counsel that I could give to you. There's a lesson to be drawn from the 26th chapter of Matthew, the occasion, the Last Supper. Quoting from the 21st verse, "As they did eat, he said, Verily I say unto you, that one of you shall betray me." Now I remind you that these were apostles, men of apostolic stature. It's always been interesting to me that they didn't on that occasion nudge one another and say, "I'll bet that's old Judas. He sure been acting queer lately." It reflects something of their stature when it is recorded that they were exceedingly sorrowful and began every one of them to say unto him, "Lord, is it I?" Would you, I plead, overrule the tendency to disregard counsel and assume for just a few minutes something apostolic in attitude at least, and ask yourself these questions: Do I need to improve myself? Should I take this counsel to heart and act upon it? If there is one weak or failing, are unwilling to follow the brethren, Lord, is it I? In the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, there is no paid ministry, no professional clergy, as is common in other churches. But more significant than this is that there is no laity, no lay membership as such. For men are eligible to hold the priesthood and to carry on the ministry of the church, and both men and women serve in many auxiliary capacities. Now, this responsibility comes to men in all walks of life. And with this responsibility comes the authority. There are many who would deny and others who would disregard it. Nevertheless, the measure of that authority does not depend on whether men sustain that authority, but rather depends on whether God will recognize and honor the authority. The fifth article of faith reads, "We believe that a man must be called of God by prophecy, and by the laying on of hands by those who are in authority to preach the gospel and administer in the ordinances thereof." In this article of faith lies a significant evidence of the truth of the gospel. I'm interested in the word "must." We believe that a man must be called of God. You know, we don't ordinarily use that word in the church. I question whether there's ever been a stake president receive a directive from the brethren saying, you are hereby ordered and directed that you must do such and such. I think the spirit of the communication would rather be, after consideration, it is suggested that, which of course by interpretation means. And unfortunately, many of us read it as it is written, but we act as though it read something like this. We believe in some circumstances, not usually, inadvertently perhaps, there may have been some inspiration with the reference to call of some men to office, possibly maybe to the higher offices of the church, but ordinarily it's the natural thought process leading to the appointment of the officials of the church. Now this position seems to be supported in the minds of those who are looking for weaknesses when they see the humanity in the leadership of the church. Bishops, stake presidents, and general authorities. They sometimes notice haphazard and occasionally inadequate demonstrations of leadership and seize upon these as evidence that the human element predominates. Others among us are willing to sustain part of the leadership of the church and question and criticize others of us. Some of us suppose that if we were called to a high office in the church, immediately we would be loyal, and we would show ourselves valiant and show the dedication necessary and commit ourselves to this service. But you can put it down in your little black book that if you will not be loyal in the small things, you will not be loyal in the large things. If you will not respond to the so-called insignificant or menial tasks which need to be performed in the church and kingdom, there will be no opportunity for service in the so-called greater challenges. A man who says he will sustain the president of the church or the general authorities, but cannot sustain his own bishop, is deceiving himself. The man who will not sustain the bishop of his ward and the president of his stake will not support the president of the church. I have learned from experience that those people who come to us for counsel, saying they cannot go to their bishops and are unwilling to accept counsel from their bishops, are unwilling or unable to accept counsel from the general authorities. Actually, the inspiration of the Lord will come to their bishop, and he can counsel them correctly. Oh, how frustrating it is, my brethren and sisters, when some members of the church come to us for counsel, and we may receive an impression, an inspiration, if you will, on what they should do. And they listen. And then we see them turn aside that counsel in favor of some desire of their own, which leads them certainly astray. Some of us are very jealous of our prerogatives and feel that obedience to priesthood authority is to forfeit one's agency. If we only knew, my brethren, sisters, that it is through obedience that we gain freedom. No one loves freedom more than the holder of the priesthood. President John Taylor spoke very vigorously on this subject. I was not born a slave, he said. I cannot, I will not be a slave. I would not be a slave to God. I would be his servant, his friend, his son. I would go at his behest, but would not be his slave. I would rather be extinct than be a slave. His friend I feel I am, and he is mine. A slave, the manacles would pierce my very bones. The clanking chains would grate against my soul. A poor, lost, servile, crawling wretch. to lick the dust and fawn and smile upon the thing that gave the lash. But stop. I am God's free man. I will not, I cannot be a slave. Unquote. The Lord said, if ye follow in my word, I repeat, if ye follow, then ye are my disciple indeed, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Now, it's not an easy thing to be amenable always to priesthood authority. I recite the experience of the founder of this university, Dr. Carl G. Mazur. He had been the headmaster of a school in Dresden, a man of distinction, man of high station. In 1856, Brother Mazur and his wife and small son, together with a brother Schoenfeld and his family and some other converts, left Germany bound for Zion. When they arrived in England, Brother Mazur was surprised to be called on a mission in England. And much to their disappointment, the families were separated and the Schoenfelds continued on to America. While the Mazurs remained in England to fill the call from the church authorities, the proud professor was required to perform many menial tasks to which in his former station he never before had stooped. It was customary among the higher German people that a man of Brother Mazur's standing never should be seen carrying packages in the street. But when the elders were going to the train, they told him to bring their carpet bags. Brother Mazur paced the floor of his room, his pride deeply hurt. The idea of carrying the suitcases was almost more than he could stand, and his wife also was deeply hurt and upset that he had to do so. Finally, he said, "Well, they hold the priesthood, and they have told me to go, and I will go." He surrendered his pride and carried the bags. Now I add, this doesn't represent a surrender of his agency. Brother Mazur, for all of his obedience, was very vigorous in the expression of his feelings. Another incident will illustrate. During his labors in England, he met a very wealthy and well-educated man who became very interested and impressed with Brother Mazur. And he invited him to bring some of the missionaries to have dinner with him at the hotel. The table manners of the elders were so annoying to Brother Mazur that afterwards he said, "I will go through poverty. I will suffer persecution. I will go to hell with the elders, but I will not go to dinner with them again." While the men who preside over you in the wards and stakes of the church may seem like very ordinary men, there is something extraordinary about them. It is the mantle of priesthood authority and the inspiration of the call they have answered. I wish you could accompany the general authority sometime on the assignment to reorganize a stake. It has been my experience on a number of occasions to assist in these reorganizations, and it never fails to be a remarkable experience. Some time ago, late one Sunday night, returning after the reorganization of a stake with Elder Marion G. Romney, we were riding along silently, too weary, I suppose, to be interested in conversation, when suddenly he nudged me and said, "Boyd, this gospel's true." An interesting statement from a member of the 12. Then he added, "You couldn't go through what we've been through in the last 48 hours without knowing that for sure." I then rehearsed in my mind the events of the previous hours, the interviews we had held, the decisions made. We had interviewed the priesthood leadership of the stake, and invited each of them to make suggestions with reference to the new state president. Virtually all of them suggested the same man. They indicated him to be an ideal man for a state president, with appropriate experience, fine family, sensible, sound, worthy in every way. Near the end of our interviewing, with just two or three left, we interviewed this man, and we found him equal to all of the estimates that had been made of him during the day. As he left the room at the conclusion of the interview, Brother Romney said, "Well, what do you think?" And I answered that it was my feeling that we had not seen the new president yet. This confirmed his feelings, and he said, "Perhaps we should get some more men in here. Maybe the new president isn't among the present priesthood leadership of the stake." He said, "But suppose we interview the remaining one or two before we take that course." Then there was another interview, as ordinary as all of the others had been during the day. Same questions, same answers. But at the conclusion of this interview, Brother Romney said, "Well, now, how do you feel?" "As far as I am concerned," I said, "we can quit interviewing." And this confirmed the feeling that had come to him, for this was the man that the Lord had set his hand upon to preside over that stake. Now, how did we know? Because we knew, both of us, together, at once, without any doubt. In reality, our assignment was not to choose a stake president. Our assignment was to find the man that the Lord had chosen. The Lord speaks in an unmistakable way. Men are called by prophecy. It is in the way we answer the call that we show the measure of our devotion. The faith of members of the church in early days was tested many, many times. In the conference report for 1856, we find the following. Heber C. Kimball, a counselor in the first presidency, is speaking. "I will present to this congregation the names of those whom we have selected to go on missions. Some are appointed to go to Europe, Australia, and the East Indies, and several will be sent to Las Vegas, to the north, and to Fort Supply to strengthen the settlements there." Such announcements often came as a complete surprise to the members of the church sitting in the audience. Because of their faith, I suppose the only question they had on their minds in response to such a call was, "When? When shall we go?" I am not so sure but that a similar call made today would call forth a response from many among us, not "when," but "why? Why should I go?" On one occasion, I was in the office of President Henry D. Moyle when a phone call he had placed earlier in the day came through. After greeting the caller, he said, "I wonder if your business affairs would bring you into Salt Lake City sometime in the near future. I would like to meet with you and your wife, for I have a matter of some importance that I'd like to discuss with you." Well, though it was many, many miles away, that man all of a sudden discovered that his business would bring him into Salt Lake City the very next morning. And, I was in the same office the following day when President Moyle announced to this man that he had been called to preside over one of the missions of the church. "Now," he said, "we don't want to rush you into this decision. Would you call me in a day or two, or as soon as you're able to make a determination as to your feelings concerning this call?" Well, the man looked at his wife, and she looked at him, and without saying a word, there was that silent conversation between a husband and a wife. And a gentle, almost imperceptible nod, and he turned back to President Moyle and said, "Well, President, what is there to say? What could we tell you in a few days that we couldn't tell you now? We have been called. What answer is there? Of course we will respond to the call. Then President Moyle said rather gently, "Well, if you feel that way about it, actually there is some urgency about this matter." I wonder if you could be prepared to leave by ship from the West Coast on the 13th of March. The man gulped, because that was just 11 days away. He glanced at his wife. There was another silent conversation. And he said, "Yes, President, we can meet that appointment." "What about your business?" said the president. "What about your grain elevator? What about your livestock? What about your other holdings?" "I don't know," said the man. "But we will make arrangements somehow. Somehow all of those things will be all right." Such is the great miracle that we see repeated over and over, day after day, among the faithful. And yet there are many among us who have not the faith to respond to the call or to sustain those who have been so called. Now there are some specific things that you can do. Search your soul. How do you regard the leadership of the church? Do you sustain your bishop? Do you sustain your stake president and the general authorities of the church? Or are you among those who are neutral or critical, who speak evilly, or who refuse calls? Better ask, "Lord, is it I?" Avoid being critical of those serving in responsible priesthood callings. Show yourself to be loyal. Cultivate the disposition to sustain and to bless. Pray. Pray continually for your leaders. Never say no to an opportunity to serve in the church. If you are called to an assignment by one who has authority, there is but one answer. It is, of course, expected that you set forth clearly what your circumstances are. But any assignment that comes under call from your bishop and your stake president is a call that comes from the Lord. An article of our faith defines it so, and I bear witness that that is so. Once called to such positions, do not presume to set your own date of release. A release is, in effect, another call. Men do not call themselves to offices in the church. Why must we presume that we have the authority to release ourselves? A release should come by the same authority from whence came the call. Act in the office to which you are called with all diligence. Do not be a slothful servant. Be punctual and dependable and faithful. You have the right to know concerning calls that come to you. Be humble and reverent and prayerful concerning responsibilities that are placed upon your shoulders. And keep those standards of worthiness so that the Lord can communicate with you concerning the responsibilities that are yours in the call that you have answered. The Lord has said, "Wherefore, lift up your hearts and rejoice, and gird up your loins, and take upon you my whole armor, that you may be able to withstand the evil day, having done all that you may be able to stand. Stand, therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, having on the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace, which I have sent mine angels to commit unto you. Taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all of the fiery darts of the wicked, and take the helmet of salvation, and the sword of my spirit, which I will pour out upon you, and my word, which I shall reveal unto you, and be agreed as touching all things whatsoever ye ask of me, and be faithful until I come, and ye shall be caught up, that where I am, ye may be also. In closing, I say again, follow the brethren. In a few days, there opens another general conference of the church. The servants of the Lord will counsel us. Now you may listen with anxious ears and heart, or you may turn that counsel aside. As in these devotionals, what you shall gain will depend not so much on their preparation of the messages as upon your preparation for them. Remember the two verses from the first section of the Doctrine and Covenants. What I, the Lord, have spoken, I have spoken, and I excuse not myself. And though the heavens and the earth shall pass away, my word shall not pass away, but shall all be fulfilled. Whether by mine own voice or by the voice of my servants, it is the same. For behold, and lo, the Lord is God, and the Spirit beareth record, and the record is true, and truth abideth forever and ever. Returning again to Carl G. Mazur, on one occasion he was leading a party of young missionaries across the Alps. As they slowly ascended the steep slope, he looked back and saw a row of sticks thrust into the glacial snow to mark the one safe path across the otherwise treacherous mountains. Something about those sticks impressed him, and halting the company of missionaries, he gestured toward them and said, "Brethren, there stands the priesthood of God. They are just common sticks, like the rest of us. Some of them may even seem to be a little crooked. But the position they hold makes them what they are. If we step aside from the path they mark, we are lost. I bear witness, my brethren, sisters, fellow students, that in this church men are, as they indeed must be, called of God by prophecy. May we learn in our youth this supreme lesson that will see us faithful through all of the challenges of our lives. May we learn to follow the brethren. I pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen."